Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Lamed Ben Amud Bet by the two dots. Hayu shtei kitei edim, kafra rishona, v'achar kach kafra shniya. We have two sets of edim. The first one denies knowing any testimony, and then the second group denies knowing any testimony. So that's the last case in the Mishnah. And the Mishnah says that both groups are chayav for shvuat ha'edut. Bishlama shniya titchayev de kafra la rishona. The second one, I understand why they're chayavim, because the first one already denied it, and now the second one are the only edim left in the case. So, of course, they should be chayav, because their denial basically denies the ability for this individual to extract the money. They're edim that would have been impactful in the case. El rishona, amai. Why are the first set of edim problematic? Hakai moshniyah. You have the second set of edim who are coming after them. So even if they don't testify, the second group will testify, so they could just say, we didn't make a difference in the case. We knew the other edim were there. They're going to take care of this situation. So Amaravino, Achav Mayaskinan. The case here is Kigon Shaita Shnia Bishat Kfira Rishona Krovim Binishotehem. That the second group of edim at the time of the first denial were Krovim Binishotehem. Rashi says over here Nasu Shte Achayot, that the edim are related to each other. They had married two sisters, and so therefore they were related to each other, and Nifsulu. If the sisters pass away, the truth is if only one of the sisters, you don't need both of them, to pass away, then that would relieve them of that problem. Then they'd be able to testify. But then, as the Balei HaTosafot point out, that even if you say Krovim b'nishotehem, you have to say Kigon, Shebishat v'yat ha'edut ayu rechokim. At the time they witnessed the event, they were not relatives. T'bein ha'tchilata v'sofa b'kashrut. You have to witness the event, not as a relative, and you also need to testify, not as a relative. So this all has to transpire between the time that they actually witnessed the event and the time that they're coming to testify. Otherwise, they were disqualified at the moment that they saw or witnessed the event because of being Krovim. Givei Eger suggests that maybe that's not the case, because the only time they'd be disqualified when they witnessed the case is if they intended to be Edim together, if they intended to testify together. If they didn't intend to testify together, then they would not disqualify each other as Krovim. They were independent Edim, and therefore they could witness the event, even as Krovim, and not disqualify each other. That also might relate to the Machloket Rashi, the Rashbam, and the Balei HaTosafot, about what makes you into an aid, and then what disqualifies you when you are amongst other people witnessing an event. It's just witnessing an event together with other people, by definition, disqualify everybody there because you are a karov. That'd be very difficult to say, because that means that anytime a relative's around, then there's no edut. But then what do you need? Do you need simply intent to testify? That's enough to make you into an aid? Or is it the fact that you have to show up in Beit Din to testify? But in either case, you could come up with a way that they have no intent of a testifying together, and that would not disqualify them. So that would solve that problem with the Balei HaTosafot. Whereas if you look in the Rabbeinu Chananel, he says that Krovim b'nishotayem means that they were relatives to one of the parties, to one of the Bali Dinim over here. Kegon shayta shniya b'shat kfirat hachkat harishona krovim b'nishotayem letoveya o lenidva. And he adds in what we already noted in the Bali Tosavot, mishkachala kegon shru'u eduzu v'hein rechukim she'i pishirim v'nit karvu. They originally were not related, and then that only happened afterwards when Nifsala Yudutan Kozmajain Krovim. Then Chazru the Kisherutam. Then they would go back to being Kosher Edim, because it's only in that interim stage that it's problematic. And for that reason, the first Kat Edim is Chayav Shvat Edut, because they did not have at that time the second Kat of Edim available to testify after they made their denial. But then, if they are relatives, then what's the issue? The answer is that they were nishotehem gosasot, that their wives were on their deathbed. They were hanging somewhere between life and death. Ma'udatema, what I would have thought was, rov gosasim lemita. The majority of people who are on their deathbed don't get up from their deathbed and they pass away. Kamash malan, not that not rov gosasim lemita. We believe rov gosasim lemita. Kamash malan, that as long as you're alive, doesn't matter that you will likely pass away. If you are alive, then you are disqualified as Zedim. And as Rashi said, Goses is considered alive. Despite the fact the majority of them are going to pass away. So when the first set of Edim come to testify, the second set of Edim are disqualified at that time. So that's what makes the first set of Edim chayav v'shuat eidut, because they would have been impactful in the case. After they already deny testimony, then the second set of Edim becomes freed of whatever that issue was. Their relationship is severed because one of the wives or both of the wives pass away, and now they're capable of testifying, and when they go take shuat eidut, they're also held accountable because they could have made a difference in the case. And that's how to explain that last case in the Mishnah. Okay, and the next Mishnah begins, Mashbi'a ani aleichem, im lo tovavu v'tiyuduni, sheyesh li biyad ploni. I want you to take a shvua. I'm going to take a shvua on your behalf, which you will accept, that if you do not come and testify on my behalf, that the following, sheyesh li biyad ploni, that I have the following items with so-and-so, pikadon, tsumed yad, v'gezel v'aveda. So he wants them to take a shvua, denying the fact that they have testimony in this issues. All the issues are issues of monetary matters. Pikadon, I deposited something with him. Tzumet yad, I lent him money. Gezel, he stole something from me. V'aveda, he picked up, that was an aveda of mine, and he didn't return it. So he has all of these items that are mine, and you are a witness to all of these things. I want you to take a shvua, denying that, if you believe that you don't have anything to say in the case. Shwa she'inanu yudim lecha edut. And then they take a shwa saying, we know nothing in this case. Ein chayavim la'achat. They're only chayav for one case over here. So despite the fact that they took a shwa denying many different matters, they only are chayav for one shwa ta'edut. Shwa she'inanu yudim she'esh lecha biyad ploni pikadon tzumet yad gezel v'aveda chayavino kol achat v'achat. If they enumerate each of the items that they say they are denying, then they will be chayab for each one of them. There's as if there's a shvua on each independent item. So even though he presents it, the toveya presents it as being numerous items, if they just simply take a generic shvua denying testimony, they're only going to be chayab one, because it's the shvua that is going to generate the chiyuv over here. On the other hand, if you take the shvua denying each item, then you're going to be chayav, as if you took a shvua on each separate item. Mashbi'ani aleichem, im lo tavo v'tiyuduni, sheish li biyad ploni pikadon, chitim v'sorim v'kusmin. So he says, I want you to take a shvua, denying the fact that you have testimony, that I have a deposit with so-and-so, and the deposit comprised of wheat, barley, and spelt. I mean that they're all different minim. As Rashi points out here, the difference between the first case in the Mishnah and the second case in the Mishnah is in the first case in the Mishnah, they're all the same type of claim. The only difference is how that claim comes about. Is it gezel? Is it aveda? Is it tsumet yad? Is it halva? What is the mechanism for which this claim comes about? In the second case, it's all the same claim, which is pikadon, but it's different items, which are chitim, sorim, kusmin. So that's how Rashi differentiates between the first case. In the second case, he says, Resha Ashmiunin Minechad Utviot Chalukot. It's one type with different claims. And the Seifa is one claim with different types in it. Shvua, She'enan Yudim Lechaidot. They confirm by taking a Shvua that they have no testimony in Chayvim Elachat. They only Chayav once. Shvua, She'enan Yudim Lechaidot. She'esh Lecha Biyad Ploni Chitim V'sorim V'kusmin. If they go ahead and repeat each item independently, chayavin al kol achat v'achat, and they're chayav on each one. So as Rashi knows, the difference is that both in the case where it's a separate form of claim, as well as even if it's the same claim but different items in the claim, if you specify each one, you're going to be chayav on each one. If you don't specify, you're going to only be chayav achat. Mashbi'ani aleichem im lo tavo v'tiyiduni sheyesh li biyad ploni nezek v'chatzi nezek tashlumei kefel. Tashlume arba'a v'chamisha, shanas ishploni et biti, upita et biti. So now you have here a list of items which on the surface all look like knasot. They're all fines. They're all things that are not about the absolute monetary obligation that you have, but rather that you owe this individual a knas. So for instance, if the case of the chatzi nezek in general is chatzi nezek tam, which comes from Karen, and that is a knas. Tashlume kefel is a knas. You're paying double the amount because you stole. Tashlume arba v'chamisha, you stole and you shechted the animal, or you stole and you sold the animal. Arba v'chamisha. Anas ish ploni et biti, upita et biti. the person raped or seduced thy daughter, those are all chayav in the knasot of 50 shekel. So now all of those seem to be claims of knasot. We're going to see that the Gemara is going to take it in a different direction. Shikani bini, my son hit me. Now, hikani bini has to be in a case where he does not create a chabura. Because if he creates a chabura, then he's chayav mita, and it's kimle d'rabba mine, and that's the next Mishnah. So here it's a case where he hit him, but it did not cause a chabura. B'shechaval bi chaveri, or my friend hit me, b'shidliki gdishi, or he lit my silo or my threshing floor on fire. B'yom HaKippurim. So the latter two, all of these things happen on Yom HaKippurim. Harelu chayavim. All of them are chayav. So here you have a question which the Gemara will have to deal with, which is there kimle d'rabba mine with regards to Yom HaKippurim? The punishment for Yom HaKippurim for a person who violates b'mezid is karet. So the question is karet subject to kimle d'rabba mine or not? And that would determine whether there is a monetary obligation in this case. And all of these cases will be contrasted in the next Mishnah, where we'll see that you're not chayav. Ibailuhu. Mashbia edei knas mahu. If a person comes along and forces edei knas to take a shvat aidut, are they liable in that case? The toveya comes to them and says, listen, you know testimony to the fact that this individual owes me these fines. Please come testify. They take a shvat knowing no testimony. They deny having any information. We find out they do have the information. Are they chayav or not? What would be the difference between knas and monetary obligations? By monetary obligations, there's no way to free yourself of the obligation. On the other hand, by knas, we have a principle, modeh b'knas is patur. So here, the litigant has the ability to free himself of the obligation. Even if the edim show up in court, it doesn't mean that you're going to be chayav. So now that's the question. When you have shuat edut by edei knas, does that automatically, does that mean that they are subject to all the rules of shuat edut? Now, Aliba de Rabbi Lazar ben Rabbi Shimon lo tibaylach. According to Rabbi Lazar ben Rabbi Shimon, it's not a question that they are chayavin. Damar yavo edim v'yaidu. The edim should come and testify. And that is, if you are modeh b'knas, you admit to the fact that you are knas, and then afterwards edim show up incriminating you. Are you still considered to be patur? It's machlokets, Rabbi Lazar ben Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. Blazer Rabbi Shimon says that you are patur as long as no other edim show up. But if other edim show up and say you are chayav, doesn't matter that you admitted to the fact that you are chayav the knas, edim are mechayev you. On the other hand, the chachamim believe that once you're modeh b'knas, you are freed of the obligation, and even if edim show up, you're still patur. So clearly, according to Blazer Rabbi Shimon, the edim would make a difference in the case no matter what. Because even if the defendant in the case admits to the knas and would be patur, as soon as the edim show up, you'd be chayav. So irrespective of whether he's modeh b'knas or not, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon believes you're going to be chayav if edim show up. So for him, edim who deny knowing testimony are causing a monetary loss in the case, and they for sure are going to be chayav for shvuat ha'edut. So that's what the Gemara says. Aliba de Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, there is no question, you're chayav for shvuat ha'edut. Kiti bailach aliba de Rabbonon. The question is, according to the Rabbanon who believe modeh b'knas is patur, d'amri modeh b'knas v'achakach v'edim patur, that even when you're modeh b'knas and you're deemed to be patur, if edim show up afterwards, you still remain patur. So now, v'rabbanon d'hotam k'man sevir luhu. Those Rabbanon, who do they hold like over here? Eleimans. What the Gemara is asking is, from yesterday's daf, that when you have something that is goreim l'mamon, is it k'mamon dami or lav k'mamon dami? That was the question that we had yesterday with regards to the Eid Echad. Is an Eid Echad considered to be subject to Shvuat Eidut? Well, that depends on whether you consider something that's Goreim LeMamon, KeMamon Dami. And that's the way the Gemara explained the Machloke between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim yesterday. Detanya, Mashbiyei Echad Patur, that's the Chachamim. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, Mechayev. And the Gemara explained the difference in their opinion between whether Davara Goreim the Mamon is considered like Mamon or not like Mamon. So that's the Gemara's question over here. The Chachamim by Modeh B'Knas, who do they subscribe to? Do they subscribe to that position of the Chachamim, or do they subscribe to the position of Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon? So the Gemara says, Ilei mekar Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon d'hocho, if they all like Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon on yesterday's daf, Hakamar Davara Goreim the Mamon k'Mamon dami. Something that could cause monetary obligation, that's enough to be considered liable. That's like a mamon dami. So over here, you would be chayav again. Shvat Eidut. If you hold like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, period, then of course you're chayav, because Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says, Mori b'knas, v'achu kach v'oidim is chayav. So there's no way to get out of the obligation if Eidim show up. So you're definitely chayav. The Chamim would say that Mori b'knas, v'achu kach v'oidim are patur. If they hold like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon of yesterday's daf, which is Gorim l'mamon, k'mamon dami, then you're also going to be chayav over here. Here, if the Eidim show up, they could be a party to obligate this individual. Who says he's going to be Mode Biknas? So you have a Goreim the Mamon, a possibility that they can cause monetary obligation here. You're going to be chayav. Ela kirabanan. The Hocha, the Rabbanan of yesterday, say, Davar Goreim the Mamon, ain't okay Mamon. It doesn't have a din of Mamon. The Amre, Davar Goreim the Mamon, Lav ki Mamon, Dar mei mai. Rabbanan of yesterday's daf, Amre, Davar Goreim the Mamon, Lav ki Mamon, Dar mei. It's not like Mamon, mai. What's the din? So these are the two tzadim. Okay, Mandilum Mode Miftar, since if the defendant in the case admits to the fact that he owes the knas, he'll be patur. La mamona ka kafarle. Therefore, the Eidim, when they take a shuwa, denying testimony, they're not denying a monetary obligation, because there's no certainty that they're going to bring about a monetary obligation. Odilma, hashta mielo odi. But at this point in time, he has yet to admit to it. So at this point in time, their testimony would make a difference in the case. So which way does it go? So again, we eliminated, out of the four possibilities over here, we eliminated three of the possibilities and said in all three of those situations, then the person definitely is chayav. In the first possibility, which is Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon is the author of the Mishnah, then of course you are chayav, because it's mode biknas patur, but achar kach ba'u edim, chayav. So if you show up as edim, whether it's before he admits the knas or after he admits the knas, you will make a monetary difference in the case, and therefore you're chayav for shvuat ha'edut. So that covers, no matter what you think about davar ha'goreim le'mamon, that covers it. The other case of the chachamim, who say mode b'knas v'achar kach v'oidim patur, then in that case you have to determine what is the position of the chachamim. If they hold davar ha'goreim le'mamon is k'mamon dami, then you're still going to be chayav, because you have the capacity to cause a monetary obligation over here, even though the defendant has a way out, but since you have davar goreim the mamon, that's enough to deem you as having a monetary value in the case, and you're going to be chayav. The only case where we don't know, and that's the question of the Gemara, is if the chachamim over there hold like the chachamim over here, which means, number one, modeh b'knas patur, even if edim come afterwards, and number two, a davar goreim the mamon, lav ki mamon dami. And now the question is, do you have a monetary impact in the case? At this moment, the guy has yet to admit it. So if you deny testimony, you're denying something that would have caused the monetary obligation, and therefore you're chayav. Or do we say, since he still has the possibility, your testimony is not really so relevant in the case, because at any moment, he could be modeh b'knas and end the case, and he'd be patur. So that's the nature of the question. Tashma, the Gemara goes to our Mishnah. So what's the case in our Mishnah? The chatzin nezek is a short time that gored, and then he pays chatzin nezek. That chatzin nezek is a knas. So Gemara says, "Kimal damar palganiska mimona." Wait a minute, that's a machloket in the Gemara and Baba Kama as to whether chatzin nezek tam is a knas or is it a monetary obligation. That all depends on what your starting point is. If your starting point is that you're really chayav nezek shalem, and the Torah had mercy on you and reduced it down to chatzin nezek, then your payment is chatzin nezek mamona. It's really a monetary obligation. The Torah just waived your obligation to pay the other half because you didn't know about it. How are you supposed to know that this animal does this? Because he's a tam. So the Torah was chas on your mamon, but it's still a monetary obligation. On the other hand, if you believe that a tam is patur le gamre, so then why are you paying chatzin nezek here? It's a knas to stop you from allowing your animal just to run around wild. We want you to take responsibility for the animal. So in order to do that, we impose a knas on you. Those are the two opinions there. So Gemara here says, well, if you believe like palga chatniska knasa, then you have an answer to your question. But if you believe like palga niska mimona, then you don't have answer to your question. So Gemara says, anicha leman damar palga niska mimona, you can answer the Mishnah and say, according to the one who says that chatzin nezek is a monetary obligation, not a knas, then you'll say the Mishnah is about a monetary obligation and you can't prove anything from our Mishnah. Leman damar knasa, according to the one who says that chatzin nezek of a tam is a knas, ma'ika lemeimar, how are you going to explain our Mishnah? The Mishnah says knas, and it says you are chayav. That would answer our question. The Mishnah, which seemingly is the position of the Chachamim, says, Knas is Chayav by Shuat Eidut. So Mar says, V'chatzi Nezek Tzurorot. You forgot. There's another Chatzi Nezek, as mentioned in the Gemara in Baba Kama. There's one Chatzi Nezek, which is a Tolada of Keren, which is when you do something that is a Shinoi, something that is unusual behavior, behavior you wouldn't expect from the animal. Goring is one of those activities. That's Keren. That is the nature of Keren, or the definition of Keren, because this is not behavior we expect from animals. Regel and Shein is a behavior that we expect from animals. Animals eat everything they see, and animals kick or step on whatever's in their way. So those are normal types of Nezek, and Nezek Rigila, things that happen all the time. Keren is Shinui. It's a change in the behavior of the animal. It's not something we expect. So the Chatzi Nezek that is associated with Keren, according to one who says it's Knas, is because it's a Shinui. It is something that's unusual. Chatzi Nezek Tzorot is a case in Baba Kama where the animal kicks a stone. The stone goes flying and does damage. So now that is normal behavior. Animals, when they're walking, kick their feet, and they kick up stones when they're walking. It's not unusual behavior. What is unusual about this is the fact that there's no direct damage. It's indirect damage, which is the stone goes flying and then hits the object and does damage. So that is a derivative damage. The Torah says you're chayav for it, but you're only chayav chatzi nezek. That chatzi nezek is halacha le Moshe Misinai, and everybody agrees it's a tolada of regel. Regel is something where the behavior is completely normal, and that's why we say that it's a din in mamon. So what we're going to say is the Chatzi Nezek mentioned in our Mishnah is Chatzi Nezek Tzorot, and that will be the Hilchata Gemira law. We have a Mesorah, Allah on the Moshe Misinai, Dimamonahu. And that way our Mishnah can't prove anything about Shvat Eidut by Knas, because we're going to explain the case of Chatzi Nezek as being a case of either Palga Nezek of Tam by Goring, which would be according to the one who says that it is Mamona, or according to the one who says it's Knas, we're going to explain it as Chatzi Nezek Tzorot, and therefore the case in the Mishnah is about Mamon and not about Knas. Next problem, which is the next line in the Mishnah, Tashma, Tashlume Kefel. Tashlume Kefel, the next case there is a Knas. You're not paying for the actual loss you caused when you stole, you're paying a double. That's a Knas. Mishum Karno. No, it's not about the doubling, it's about the Keren. And that's where they're taking the Shvuah, and the reason they're Chayav for the Shvuat Eidut is because of the denial of the Keren. Tashlume Dal Behei, that's the next case in the Mishnah. Mishum Karna, again, it's not about the multiplier, the 3 and 4 times, it is the Keren, the underlying principal amount that you owe, and that's why they're Chayav Shvuat Eidut. Shanas Ishploni Upitad Biti. So what about the Onus and Mefateh, rape and seduction in the Mishnah, which are clearly a Knas? Mishum Boshed Upgam. Because there are obligations there in rape and seduction of payments that are also of monetary nature. The 50 shekel is a knas. That we already know because it's a fixed amount no matter what the status or stature of the individual is, both the rapist and the victim. So if it's a fixed amount, you know it's a knas. Boshet and pegam fluctuate based on boshet is the mivayesh and mitvayesh, the one who's causing that embarrassment, and the one who is being embarrassed. And pagam has to do with the value of the woman, the change from her being a bitula into a bi'ula. And again, that would depend on the woman, and that would also have a factor that is fluctuating. So boshet and pagam are monetary obligations of the rapist. They are not kenas. So that's what we're speaking about in terms of shvuat eidut. But at least that's the way they're going to explain the Mishnah, that it's a monetary obligation, and that's why you're chayav for shvuat Eidut. So Gemara says, "My kamashmalan kula mamonahu." If you now made all the cases in the Mishnah into monetary obligations, then what is the Mishnah coming to teach you? If the Mishnah was speaking about kenas, then there'd be a chiddush in the Mishnah that even though it's kenas, shvuat eidut is applicable to the kenas. Fine, that's a chiddush in the Mishnah. If you tell me every case in the Mishnah is actually a monetary matter, then what's the chiddush of the Mishnah? If you can testify in a case where you would make a monetary impact, your chayav for shvuat eidut, that's pretty basic. That everybody knows, and that you don't need the Mishnah to tell you. So Reisha Chadakamashmalan, Seifa Chadakamashmalan. In the latter section of the Mishnah, each section has one chiddush in it, and then everything else is brought down on Gav. So Reisha Chadakamashmalan, the Reisha has this chiddush. The Chatzi Nezek Tzorot Mimonahu. that Fati Nezek Tzurot is classified as Mamon, and in that way you're going to be Chayav for Shavuot Eidut. The truth is that I'm not sure why the Mishnah needs to tell you that, but the Chiddush here is the Chatzi Nezek, and not the fact that it is Mamon. It's a Toladav Regel, so of course it's Mamon and not Kenas. The Chiddush here is, despite the fact that you are Chayav, that you pay only Chatzi Nezek for this damage that you are doing. Seifa Chadaka Mashulan, the Seifa teaches us one Chiddush, Shedlige Gdishi Biyom HaKippurim, Lafuke Mai. What is that coming to exclude? Afuke mid Rav Nechunya ben Akana. That comes to exclude from the position of Rav Nechunya ben Akana. The Tanya, Rav Nechunya ben Akana, he also Yom Kippurim kishabbat l'tashlumin. He made Yom Kippur equal to Shabbat when it came to monetary compensation. Ma Shabbat, where it's kimle derabim minei, because there's a chiyuv skila, so too by Yom Kippurim, the chiyuv karet results in kimle derabim minei. So our mission is coming to say that that's just not true. Our mission is saying that if you have a monetary obligation that derives from a violation of Yom Kippur, you're going to be chayav in that case. And there is a monetary obligation here. If you come and testify, you would have made a monetary difference, and therefore there is what they do against the position of Rav Nechunya ben Akana, who believes that karet has a din of kimle derabbanan. The Chachamim, who disagree with Rav Nechunya ben Akana, believe that only mitot bidei adam have a din of kimle derabbanan, especially given the fact that karet can be discharged through malkot. We learned already in malkot that if you violate something that's a chiyuv karet, if you get malkot, then you remove the chiyuv karet. So the chiyuv karet can be eliminated. That's number one. Number two is, it's min hashamayim. When you have something that's min hashamayim, you can do tshuva and be released from the karet. Both of those matters then take away the aspect of kimlei derabba minei, according to the Chachamim. Nechoni ben Yekana says, it is like an equivalent to a mita bidei shamayim karet, and therefore it has a din of kimlei derabba minei, just like mitat bidei adam. So our Mishnah is teaching us those two chidushim, one about chatzi nezek tzrorot, that it is a monetary obligation, and therefore it is subject to shvuat ha'idut. The second chiddush is that Yom Kippur does not have a din of kimlei derabba minei. Alright, tashma. Mashbiani aleichem in lo tovo biti yuduni, shehotzi ish ploni shemra al biti. So here, with motzi shemra, we know for sure it's a kenas. And over here, you don't have the other issues of boshet and pigam and all these other issues that make it into a monetary matter. So for sure, we're speaking about a kenas. We're talking about an issue of kenas. And so here he's saying, I want you to take a shvua that you don't know any testimony on my behalf that would help me in this case, that so-and-so spoke lashon hara about my daughter and said, lo matzati bitulim lebitcha. Ti chayavin. Then they are chayav. Hode b'fi atzmo patur. On the other hand, if the person who they are accusing of this lashon hara admits to the fact that he actually said this, then he is patur, because that is mode b'kanas patur. Ha mani. Who's the author of this braita? If it is Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, he damar yavo edim v'yaidu. So if it is Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, who says that even b'mode b'knas, you are not patur if edim show up afterwards, then what are you going to do with the latter part of this braita? Ema seifa. Hode me'atzmo, patur. If he admits of his own volition, then he is patur. That's not a guarantee by Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, because if edim show up afterwards, you would be chayav. How can the braita make a definitive statement, modeh b'knas is patur? That's only true if you know other edim show up. It's atan the rabbanon. It goes like the rabbanon, and now we would be able to prove that the rabbanon believe that when it comes to a case of knas, that you are subject to shvuat ha'edut. Because the ratio of the braita says that if you take such a shvuat ha'edut, you're going to be chayav for it. So you see that they believe you're chayav, even though this is clearly the sheet of the rabbanon, because they say modeh b'knas is patur lagamre, even if edim would show up afterwards. So that would be the answer to our question. Where it says, no, kula Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimoni. This sprite is authored by Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon. V'achi gamar, lo mishkachat la, if we don't have it, hodem b'pi atzmo de patur, el eicha delek edim klal, v'hode me'atzmo. You're not going to find a case where hodem b'pi atzmo is patur, elayim kein, there are no edim in the case, and v'hodem me'atzmo, and he made the admission. Now the truth is that it is actually miduyak in the braita, even though this sounds like a very strange way to read the braita, The Lashon HaBraita actually supports this understanding. And that is because the beginning of the Braita, the Reisha says, Mashvi ani aleichem in lo tavo v'ti iduni, sho itzi ish ploni shem ra'al biti, chayavin. Chayavin is in the plural. Hodeh mi pi atzmo, patur is in the singular. If it was speaking about the edim, and whether you're chayav for shvuat ha'edut or not, in the first case it should say chayavin, in the second case it should say in plural, paturin. The fact that it switches from chayavin in the first case to patur in the second case shows you there's a shift in the subject of the Braita. And that is in the beginning of the Braita they're speaking about the edim who took the shvuat ha'edut, they are chayavin. In the latter part, it is hodeh mipi atzmo patur, is referencing to the party that is admitting to it, that he is patur, as long as no edim show up, you're going to be patur. And we're going to explain it in the shita of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, and then we're left with no conclusion as to what the position of the chachamim is with regards to kenas. According to Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, we are certain that when it comes to kenas, that you are chayav, because he believes that even if he's modeh b'knas, if edim show up afterwards, you're going to be chayav. And therefore, if you take shvuat ha'edut denying you no testimony, you've had a monetary impact on the case, and you're going to be chayav. According to the chachamim of yesterday, where davar ha'gorim the mamon is nakim mamon, we're left with an uncertainty with regards to knas. Is your denial of testimony a monetary denial because right now you would have made a difference in the case, the guy has yet to admit, and therefore you should be chayav shvuat ha'edut? Or, since there's always a possibility, it's be modeh b'knas patur, then you'd have no idea whether your testimony would have made a difference or not. And since that's the case, you should be patur from shvuat ha'edut. And we have no proof, or we had no answer to that question. All right, next Mishnah. Next Mishnah is the opposite of the cases in the previous Mishnah. Mashvi'a ani aleichem im lo tavo'u v'teyudu shani kohen shani levi. I want you to take a shvuah to the effect that you don't know testimony about the fact that I am a Kohen, the fact that I am a Levi, she'eni ben grusha, she'eni ben chalutza, I am not a disqualified Kohen. My father did not marry a divorcee or a chalutza, which would make me into a Kohen chalal. She'ish ploni Kohen, she'ish ploni Levi, or that so-and-so is a Kohen, or so-and-so is a Levi, Sheino ben Grusha, Sheino ben Chalutza, he's not a disqualified Kohen. So now here you had two sections in the first part of the Mishnah. In one section he spoke about himself, that you know no testimony about me. And in the second part of the Mishnah, he had, you know no testimony about someone else. The failure in each of these cases is different. In the first case in the Mishnah, the failure is there's no monetary question. It's a question, are you a Kohen or are you a Levi? These aren't matters of monetary issue, they are matters of isur, whether the Kohen is permitted to eat or not eat. They might have ramifications that are monetary, which he's now allowed to eat truma, or he won't have to pay if he ate truma, because he was not Israel, but still, the testimony itself is about the individual. Shvuat ha'edut is only about monetary matters, not about isurim, or not about status, like Kohen and Levi. That's number one. So the first half of the Mishnah, that's the problem. In the second part of the Mishnah, the problem is that you're asking for someone else. And we learned already on Friday's daf, and we're going to see it upcoming in 2 days' daf, that the only time you're chayav is if the claim comes mipi atoveya. It has to come from the claimant himself. If he doesn't ask you to testify, then there is no obligation of shvuat ha'edut. Over here he's saying, I want you to testify about so-and-so that he is a Kohen, about so-and-so he's a Levi. The claimant or the person who's asking for it over here is not the Toveya, is not the one who needs the testimony. So that's the failure in the second half. The truth is that the second thing also has the second failure, which is asking about being a Kohen or Levi. They're both failures there. It's not a monetary matter, and it's not mipi Toveya. So you have actually a failure on both fronts in the second part of the Mishnah. First part of the Mishnah is a failure because it's not a monetary matter. Then the next, Shanas Ishploni et Bito, Upitat Bito. That so-and-so raped his daughter, or that he seduced his daughter. Vishachaval bi bini, or that my son hit me, and here he may have wounded him, he injured him. Vishachaval bi chaveri, or that my friend injured me. Or lit my threshing floor, or my silo, on fire on Shabbat, everybody in this Mishnah is patur from shvuat ha'edut. So we discussed already the first two sections of the Mishnah. The next part of the Mishnah is very difficult, which is Shanas Ish Ploni et Bito, Upitat Bito. So what's the failure in that case? So is the failure that it is third party, or is the failure in this part of the Mishnah that there is a problem of Kimlei Derabba Minei? So if you look in Rashi, Rashi over here quotes V'yesh Mifarshim. There are some people who explain Shanas Ish Ploni Upitat Bito. Ha'av habal bito, v'taymed the pturim b'shem deika chiyuv mita. The reason he's patur over here is because of kimlei derabba minei. He raped his own daughter and he seduced his own daughter. Vafani kein shamati. And Rashi says, I heard that as well. That's the explanation that I was given for this Mishnah. And in that case, the failure here is that there's a chiyuv mita similar to the remaining cases in the Mishnah. This case sits between the beginning of the Mishnah and the latter half of the Mishnah. The beginning of the Mishnah, the failures are either it's not monetary matters, or the Toveya was not the claimant. The latter half of the Mishnah, the problem is you have Kimlei Derabba Minei. There are death penalties involved, and therefore there's no monetary obligation because there is a death penalty. This case of rape and seduction sits right between them. What is the problem with that? Rashi says that he had people who explained, and this is how he heard from his Rebbeim, that the problem here is was the father who raped his own daughter or seduced his own daughter, which is a chiyuv mita, and a chiyuv mita that would preclude a monetary payment. And that's why you're patur in that case, because there's no monetary matter. It's kimlei derabba minei. And then it would match up with the cases later in the Mishnah. He says, v'yev shar laha mita. He says, sorry, I think that's wrong. Da'afilu below chiyuv mita, nami, man katova. Over here, who is the claimant? Hashta im ansacher, if someone else raped his daughter, kimlan boshto b'gama v'knasa lavia. The father is the recipient of the boshet, pagam, and kanas. All of those monetary payments go to the father. Ansa via kanas by the shlumela. If the father himself is the violator, what is he going to do? Pay himself? I mean, the money is owed to the father. If the money is owed to the father, then what is the matter in this case? I mean, that there is no monetary matter because the money all comes to him. There's no claimant in the case. So the case doesn't get off the ground. And that's what Rashi says, that cannot be the explanation of the Mishnah, because if it is a rape by the father of the daughter, or a seduction of the father of the daughter, the monetary obligation doesn't exist at all, because the payments would go to the father, and therefore there's no claimant for the payments. So Rashi therefore says the explanation must be that it's a case where we're speaking about someone else. Shanas Ruvain Bito Shel Shimon Ubito Diktani Ish Ploni Dele Elkoi. It's going on so-and-so. It's a continuation of the first half of the Mishnah. The first half of the Mishnah says, come and testify that so-and-so is a Kohen. Come and testify that so-and-so is a Levi. Bito diktani a ishploni le'elkoi. Oshi ishbian shanash ishploni a bito shel oto da'irin be'ad hashto. The pturim di'in mishmu mipia toveya. The problem is that the toveya is not the one who's asking for it here. He's a third party, and that's what you had said. What's the problem here? Because it's anash ishploni et Bito, not Bito his own daughter, but Bito shall a third party. And the problem is that the Toveya, the one asking for it, is not the one who has the claim over here. That's the way Rashi reads it. The Balei Tosafot disagree with Rashi and say, it's not true. You can come up with scenarios where the daughter is entitled to the payments and not the father. And that is a Yitoma b'chaye abia. That is an orphan in the life of her father. For instance, she was married off by her father as a Nara Hamurasa, and before the marriage was consummated, she divorced this individual. She is now what's called the Yitoma B'chaye Aviah. Her father already married her off. He's lost any control over his daughter, and therefore his daughter now becomes an independent entity. She is still a Nara because she never got married. She was engaged to get married, halachically, but she never got married. So she's a Betula, who is a Nara. And therefore, if there is rape in this case, then you could have a problem of, number one, chiyuv mita, which is the father is the one who's doing the raping. He is chayav mita. You could also have a monetary obligation where the monetary claim is going to the daughter and not to the father, because the daughter has now reached an independent state monetarily because the father had married her off at that point in time. She was married before she got divorced, at least halachically, even though she's still a bitula now, because the marriage was never consummated, it never reached the point of nisuin. So that's what the Balei Tosafot would say. Nira de lokasha mide. Dehilgal ukma benarash nitarsa v'nid garsha sheish la knas uknasa le'atzma. She gets a knas, and the knas goes to her because she is now a yitoma b'chaye havia. But he says miu hadikani ocha opitai bito lo ati shapir shrei machlolo. Says the problem with this is what I noted already in the previous Mishnah. There's a difference between me'anes and mefateh. By me'anes, you could say that there's a monetary obligation that exists because there was no willing party here. In the case of mefateh, how can the daughter have a claim against the father if she was a willing participant? Maybe it's dealing with a minor who cannot be mochel on the kenas. And therefore, even if it was seduction, she's a minor, and therefore the seduction doesn't count. It becomes equivalent of statutory rape, because she's just too young to be able to forgive. And according to the Rabbanan over there, we believe that by the case of rape, the knas applies even to a ktana. Machloket there is whether it's only by a ne'ara and or a bogeret, or it also includes a ktana, that you would have a knas. The Balei Tosafot are trying to answer on behalf of the Rebbeim of Rashi, as well as the others that believe that the case here is a case of rape by the father, and the problem is Kimle Deraba Mine, which is the latter half of the Mishnah, and not the earlier part of the Mishnah, which is a problem that the Toveya is not the party that's making the claim, which is the way that Rashi explained it. Those are the two different ways to explain that line in the Mishnah. Then everything afterwards in the Mishnah is Kimle Deraba Mine, which is his son hit the father and wounded him. In that case, he's chayav mita for wounding his father, and so therefore he's patur from the monetary obligation. Or, if the person injured a party, or burnt down his gadish on Shabbat, there's kimlei derabba minei, and he's patur from the tashlumim. So in all these cases, there is no chiyuv of shvat eidut, because there is no monetary obligation. Now Gemara says, taima diish ploni kohen, diish ploni levi. The reason that there's a failure in the Mishnah is because the claim was about a Kohen and a Levi. Tamanet leploni biyad ploni chayavin. It implies from that the failure here was a Kohen and a Levi. The fact that you were speaking about a non-monetary matter. But had you been speaking about a monetary matter, you would have been chayav, even though this is a non-interested party. The Toveya, the one asking for the testimony, is not the claimant himself. So Haktani Seifa, what about the Mishnah coming on Lamed Hey that said, Ashi Yishmu Mipi HaToveya? Over there it makes it clear that if you don't have a claim from the Toveya, then there is no Shvat Eidut. So here, our Mishnah gave, as I noted before, two cases. The first case was a case where the individual was making the claim for himself as a Kohen and a Levi, and there the failure was that it was not a monetary matter. Then we had a second question, which was, the individual was making a claim on behalf of someone else for a Kohen and a Levi. So I said to you, that problem is that it doesn't come mipi HaToveya. And that's what the Gemara exactly is saying. Well, then why mention Kohen and Levi? If Kohen and Levi are not the problem, then say it even in a monetary case. If someone comes along and says, I'm making a claim for someone else, saying that he needs a dude, come and testify on his behalf in a monetary matter, it would have failed there too. So why give an example of Kohen and Levi if you can even give a monetary example and it would have failed? Because it wasn't the Toveya, it wasn't the claimant who was asking for the Eidut. So what the Gemara is midayek from that is if it was a monetary matter, then it would work. But that goes against the Mishnah later on, and what we learned on Friday's daf as well, which is that you need to have the claim mipi HaToveya. How are you going to reconcile that? Our Mishnah seems to be soter that. So Amar Shmuel biba b'harsha'a. It's a case where there was a power of attorney. So now we change the dynamic of the case, because if you're granted a power of attorney, you become like the Toveya now. So here, the failure in our Mishnah is that even though you are granted a power of attorney, it still fails because of the problem of Kohen and Levi, which means it's not a monetary matter. Had it been a monetary matter, you would have been successful in the case because you have a power of attorney. Now, the Balei Tosafot point out that the Gemara in Baba Kama tells us that a power of attorney makes you into a shliach. And now a shliach, we know, doesn't work. That's what we saw already on Friday's daf. We're going to see in the Mishnah Lamed Hey that if you ask someone else to go and ask these individuals to testify on your behalf, even though shlucho shel adam kamoto doesn't work, it needs to mean mipi HaToveya directly. Even though they a shliach, it doesn't work. And if a harsha'a, power of attorney, is the equivalent of shlichut, then why does that help you over here? So Balei Tosafot answer in the end that power of attorney is stronger than shlichut. By shlichut, you can only act as a proxy for the individual. but you do not become a party to the case. In the power of attorney, you have enough power to go and make a claim in court and extract money from someone else. Not as a proxy, but as a baldavar. And he says that is a much stronger form of shlichut. It's as if the person themselves is there, and therefore it's considered to be piatoveya. Since you have a right to make a claim in court, you also have a right to demand that they deem show up and testify. And they will be chayav if they deny such testimony. So that is the case of Bar Basha. The Gemara says, "Vamrei nar dialog katvina or katam mitaltele." We don't write harsha. We don't write powers of attorney on mitaltele. As Rashi explains over here, the problem is that mitaltelin are items that disappear or move around. They are not fixed objects. So you come along and you give a power of attorney to so-and-so over mitaltelin, the mitaltelin are being held by someone else. You're making a claim that they're yours. The other guy could deny that they are yours. So now it's mechze kishikra. It looks like a big lie if you go ahead and write a power of attorney empowering this individual to go collect your mitaltelin from so-and-so. So-and-so says they're not your metaltelin. So-and-so says they're his. So how can you write up a document that in the end says in it that you are giving power of attorney to this person to go and take those objects that are yours? They're not yours according to the other party. And how can a deem sign on it that these are yours objects that you're giving over the power of attorney? So there's two things to note from this. The language of their power of attorney was not a generic power of attorney, but a very specific power of attorney. Power of attorney didn't work to give generic power to the individual and say you can act on my behalf and everything, but rather it has to be at a particular item or object. By karka, when you deal with land, land doesn't move, and karka ain't an exelet. Land can't be stolen. So in that case, you can write our shah because they didn't consign to it and say that it's his karka no matter where it is. Even if someone else is denying it, the karka is not gone anywhere. By metaphylline, they could have been sold, they could have been taken away. There are only many reasons why you would believe that you can't write a harsha'ah, or power of attorney, for metaltelin. So Gemara answers, Hani mili eched de kafre. That's only if you have a denial from the other party. Of a lo kafre katvina. If the other party has yet to deny your ownership of those metaltelin, then it's not mechze kashikra. Because he's saying those are my items deposited with so-and-so. And the edim could sign on that and say there's a power of attorney. So-and-so never denied that. So-and-so never said they weren't your items. So then it's not mechze kashikra, and that's why it goes through. And obviously, afterwards, he's going to deny it, otherwise there's no court case. The reason you need a deem afterwards is because the party denies, and that's what the Baal Tosfot say. After he wrote the power of attorney, then the other party denies the claim, and therefore you now have to go to court, and that's why you have the Shuat Eidut that's going on. Now, Loman Damar Bim Rube, what about the Man Damar in Baba Kamu who says, Afilo lo kafrale lo katvinan? Even if he doesn't deny, you're not allowed to write a harsha'ah. Matidin d'ha'cha b'pikadon. Says this Mishnah is speaking about a pikadon, where we always write harsha'ah for a pikadon. Inami ukmei b'mikarke. Or you have to set up the Mishnah as a case of karka. The vadai katvinin lay, the karka in an exelet. So by Tosfot say over here, karka in an exelet, and therefore you can write harsha'ah and karka all the time. And then the Baal Tosfot said, then why didn't the Gemara give that answer that would have applied to everybody, or would have been relevant to everybody? Because, Gemara just explains the mission according to the main position in Baba Kama that we hold like, and that's why it is the case. Now, Rabbeinu Tam Posek, Rabbeinu Tam comes to the conclusion, the Katvina Nafilo Metaltele de Kafre. The Rabbeinu Tam says in the end that we don't even hold like that opinion that says that when there's a denial that you can't write a harsha, power of attorney, the time of the lo katvina mifarish mishum demechse kishikra. The reason given why you don't do it is because it looks like sheker. Vakotev, maskinan demechse de shikra lo chayshinan. He says that in other places in Shas, we see that we don't worry about mechse kishikra. And since we don't worry about mechse kishikra, then in this case, if that's the problem, then it's also not a problem in this case. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam concludes that we do write harshot even on metaltelim, and even on metaltelim that are being denied by the other party, and we don't worry about mechse kishikra. Obviously, this is not the topic of our Gemara over here, but the Baal Tosfot would end off, ein kan makom la'arich. This isn't the place to discuss it, but he does bring this issue of the Rabbeinu Tam that tries to solve the problem entirely, which is to say that in the end, it doesn't matter because we write Mehershaot on all of these matters. Right, Tan Rabbanan, minayich ein ha-katuv midaber elo b'tviyat mamon. The underlying assumption throughout this perek, in all the Mishnayot that we've seen, is that only if you have a monetary claim is there Shvat Eidut. And our Mishnah is the most prominent of those. Over here we ask for testimony with regards to an issue that has to do with Kohen and Levi. There's no din of Shvat Eidut. So how do you know that that is the case? The Pasuk in Vayikra Hey doesn't really give you any information. It says, a nefesh ki techata, shema kol alavu eid, o ra'a o yada, im lo yagid ben asal vono. There's nothing in that pasuk that gives you any indication that it's speaking about monetary matters. So now we have a number of different opinions as how do we get to that conclusion. So Rabbi Eliezer Omer, nemar kan oin, v'nemar lahalan oin. The word o appears a number of times in that pasuk, which is o ra'a o yada. So that is the O that is found by Shvuat Eidut. And then later on, there's also by Shvuat HaPikadon, the word O also appears a number of times, which is B'kikhesh Bamito B'Pikadon, O B'Tzumet Yad, O B'Gazel, O Ashaket Amito, O Matzah Avida B'kikhesh Ba. So the word O there also appears numerous times. Malahalan, Enu Midaber B'Tzviat Mamon. Just like the word O, which appears numerous times by Shvuat HaPikadon, is speaking about monetary matters. Those are all monetary claims. And Shvuat HaPikadon comes from you denying a monetary obligation. Afkan enu midaber elo b'tviat mamon. So it comes from a gzeir shava of the word O, but it's O multiple times. The word O-in doesn't appear. O-in means the plural of O. So it is that you have multiple O's by Shvuat HaEidut, and you have multiple O's by Shvuat HaPikadon. The Gzeir Shava says, just like by Shvuat HaPikadon, it's a monetary obligation, so too, by Shvuat HaEidut, it is a monetary obligation. It says, Owen derotzeach yochichu. What about the fact that O appears numerous times by rotzeach? O be'evayiko, O ishlich ala bitzdia. So in Pashat Masei, where it discusses the issue of rotzeach, there you also have a multiple manifestations of the word O. And over there, there it has O multiple times, and there clearly it's not speaking about monetary matters, it's speaking about capital issues. Danin, Oin, Sheshiman Shvua, Moin, Sheshiman Shvua. That we are Dan Gzer Shava from an O that includes a Shvua, from an O that includes a Shvua. By Rutzeach, there's no din of Shvua. It's a murder that's going on over there. The Owen of Rotzeach, which doesn't have a Shvua associated with it, should not be the Gzer Shava. So therefore, it makes more sense to compare it to Pikadon, where there's a Shvua, and not to Rotzeach. Owen de Sota Yochiyochu. What about the Owen of Sota? By Sota, you also have the word O appear numerous times. O Avar Alav Ruach Kina, O Ish Asher Tavor Alav. So you have the word O appears a couple of times. Shehein Owen. There you have multiple oin, v'yeshimayin shvua, and there's a shvua that the woman is taking, denying the fact that she had an adulterous affair. Umidabrim shalobitz v'yad mamon. And there is not speaking about a monetary matter. And even though the Bali Tosafot will point out that by sota, there is a monetary implication, which is she's going to lose her tuba, nevertheless, that is secondary to the main issue, which is she an adulteress or not? And that goes back to what we said earlier, that even though by the Kohen and the Levi, their status does have monetary implications, nevertheless, that's not the primary issue of being a Kohen or a Levi. That's a derivative factor, and therefore it's not a monetary matter. So, danin oin sheishim en shvua, ve'eni ma'em Kohen, me'oin sheishim en shvua, ve'eni ma'em Kohen. We're going to have the Gzeir Shava from O, multiple O's, that have a shvua, but don't have a Kohen associated with it. For Shvuat Eidut and Shvuat HaPikadon, there's no Kohen involved in the process. V'ayuchichu Owen de Rotzeach, Shein Amehem Shvua. Owen of Rotzeach are not qualified because they don't have a Shvua. V'ayuchichu Owen de Sota. And the Owen of Sota, if a Pish Yeshimem Shvua, even though it has a Shvua, Yeshimem Kohen. It has a Kohen associated with the protocol over there, and that makes it different than Shvuat Eidut. So if I had to pick the Gzeir Shava that makes the most sense, it would be between Shvuat HaEidut and Shvuat HaPikudon, because they are most similar. This does raise a more fundamental issue, which we've discussed many times, which is a Gzeir Shava is something that only can be given through a Mesorah. You can't make up your own Gzeir Shava. So then why is the Gemara here searching for the Gzeir Shava and saying maybe the Gzeir Shava should be this way, maybe it should be that way? What do you mean maybe? If you have a Mesorah, it works. If you don't have a Mesorah, it doesn't work. So why is the Gemara going after this? That goes back to how many of the Rishonim explain what does it mean that you have Gzeirah Shavah. Doesn't mean necessarily that you have Gzeirah Shavah and you know exactly what it is. You might know that there's a Gzeirah Shavah of O-O by Shvuat Ha'edut. You don't know what the other side of that Gzeirah Shavah is. So that's what the Gemara is now opening up. You might, according to Rabbeinu Tam, have a number of Gzeirot Shavot, which means there's a fixed number of them, but you don't know where they are. So again, the Mesorot might not be as exact as we would think in terms of the Gzeirah Shavah. You have information that there is a limud, you have information that gives you general parameters, but you don't have the exact parameters. And that's why the Gemara many times has spekot about how to apply the Gzeirah Shavah. So that was Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Now we have Rabbi Kiva's opinion. Now Rabbi Kiva Omer, Vayaki Asham Lachat Mi'ele. If he is responsible for one of these, Yesh Me'ele Shu Chayav, Ve'yesh Me'ele Shu Patur. There's sometimes you are going to be Chayav, there's sometimes that you are going to be Patur. So this is the header dealing with the Korban Olev Yoreid for the items that are subject to Korban Olev Yoreid, which is after it mentions about Shvat Eidut, and Shvat Bitoy, and Yidiot Tumah, it says, Vayaki Yesham Ne'achat Mi'ele. And that means that some of these you are Chayav for, sometimes you will not be Chayav. How are, or what are the situations in which you are going to be Chayav? And what are the situations in which you are going to be Patur? Tavo Mamon, Chayav. If it's a monetary claim, you are Chayav. Tavar Acher, if the other claim, meaning not for monetary matter, Patur. What Rabbi Kiva doesn't explain is, how does he know that that's the distinction? He has a distinction which says sometimes you're Chayav, sometimes you're Patur, but then he makes the distinction in monetary and non-monetary matters, even though he has no evidence to suggest that that is the distinction that you need to make. Yossi Aglili Omer, Yossi Aglili offers a third alternative, Rabbi Omer, Vu Eid, O Ra'ah, O Yada, that it says in the Pasuk, it's an Eid that either saw or knew. The pasuk is speaking about edut, where you may have only one of the two items. You either may have knowledge without seeing, or you have seeing without knowledge. So you witness something, but you don't know what it's about. What's a scenario where you can witness something and not know what it's about? I lent you this money before these witnesses. Yavo ploni ploni veyudu. The so-and-so should come and testify to the fact that I lent you money in front of him. Zohi riyah belo yidiyah. That's a riyah where they witness the passing of money, but they have no idea why the money was passed. The truth is that that really presents a serious issue, because then how do they know that there was a loan that took place? How do they know that that money wasn't simply a gift? Meaning that their testimony will not obligate the individual here, because their testimony says that he passed money. Why does passing of money mean that he must owe him money? Rashi solves that problem by saying that the defendant over here says that if these two edim show up and say that I took money from you, then I'll pay it. Other Rishonim think that Rashi's explanation is very difficult, because there the obligation is not coming because of the testimony of the witnesses, it's coming because of the admission of the defendant. It's only because the defendant agrees to pay, meaning he's mitzchayev himself to pay. If the edim say such, that's what's creating the issue. On the other hand, other Rishonim explain the case in the following manner, in order to avoid that problem of Rashi, but to solve this issue as to how you have a situation in which you are chayav, even though the witnesses only saw money changing hands, but have no idea about the topic or what was going on with that exchange of money. So what many of the Rishonim explain over here is that the individual denied any transaction. He said, I never had anything to do with you, I never had any transaction with you. If these witnesses come and testify to the fact that there was money passed from one to the other, that shows you that there was a transaction. It doesn't matter what the transaction was, it means that he's chukzak kafran. He's now chukzak as a denier, and he'll be chayav to pay because we don't believe him anymore. He denied ever having anything to do with this guy, and it's just not true. And that's what the edut could be about, and that would solve the problem as to what re'iyah without yidiyah would do with you. Yidiyah below re'iyah, knowledge without witnessing, is ketzad. Manehu dita li bifnei ploni uploni. You admitted to owing me that money in front of so-and-so. Ve'yavo ploni uploni be'idu. And now so-and-so, those witnesses should come and testify. So yidiyah below re'iyah. That is knowledge without witnessing. So here, they didn't witness the original loan, but they heard from the debtor that he owed money to the creditor. So that's the idea below riya. So what Rabbi Yosef Galili is pointing out is that the way that the pasuk says it, o ra'a, o yada, means that you can have a witnessing of one of those two aspects and still be relevant to the case. That's only true in monetary matters. When it comes to capital cases, when it comes to other issues, then seeing and not knowing, or knowing and not seeing, doesn't help you out. You need to have direct knowledge. Otherwise, there's nothing to be said over here. And if there's an admission by the individual, an individual can't be Mashiach at that moment. Person can't make himself into a Rasha. So his admission in those cases isn't going to matter. His admission does matter in monetary matters. And so that's why we must be speaking about a monetary matter. That's the only case where you can separate between the Yediyah and Riyah and have it be relevant in both of those instances. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Chiev Kan, V'Chiev Pikadon. The Torah tells you you're Chayav by Shvat Eidut. It tells you you're Chayav by Shvat HaPikadon. Mala halan enu medaber b'tviat mamon. Avkan enu medaber ela b'tviat mamon. Just like over there, it's speaking about monetary matters. So to over here, it's speaking about monetary matters. V'od kavachomer. It is a kavachomer. Uma pikadon, shasabo nashim ka nashim, by shvat pikadon, where it makes no difference if it's a woman or a man. Krovim kirechokim, whether you're a relative or not a relative. Psulim kshirim, whether you're pasule edut or kasher edut. V'chiev al kol achat v'achat bifnei beitin. And every time you take a shvat pikadon in front of beitin, or shalom bifnei beitin, you are chayav on every one of them. There, it's only speaking about monetary matters. Eidut, shelo asa banashim kanashim. By shvat eidut, where women are not considered on par with men. Krovim kirechokim, relatives are different than non-relatives. Psulim kiksherim, and psulim are different than ksherim. Venu chayev ela achat bifnei beitin. And in beitin, if you take multiple shvuot ha-eidut, you only chayav one. That's what we saw in the Mishnah on Lamed Aleph. So there, it's only speaking about tviat mamon. Then the writer says, "Mala pikadon shekein lo asabo mushpa kenishba umezid kishogeg." Wait a minute, pikadon has some side of it where it doesn't make the mushba kenishba. That over there, shvat pikadon, you have to be the one who's taking the shvua. It's not mipi acherim umezid kishogeg. And we don't say that a meshlig has the same din as a shogeg. Tomar be'edut, shekein asam mushba kenishba. There, the case, or the main case of shvat eidut is when you're mushba mipi acherim, umezid kishogeg, and as we explained before, umezid and shogeg are considered to be equal. Talmud lomar, techeta, techeta, the gzera shava. And you have the gzera shava of techeta, techeta, and so, inemar kan techeta, inemar lahalan techeta, by shvat eidut it says techeta, and by Shvat HaPikadon it says Techata, Malalanu Medaber El B'Tviat Mamon, Afkan and Medaber El B'Tviat Mamon. Just like over there it was about Tviat Mamon, so too over here it's about Tviat Mamon. Right, so that's the end of the Braita. We had here four different ways to bring about this Limud. Rabbi Eliezer, who says it is a Gzer Shava of O.O. from Shvat HaPikadon. Rabbi Akiva, who says that our case of Shvat Eidut says there's sometimes your chayav, sometimes your patur. Difference between being monetary matter and non-monetary matter. The Briosia Galili, who says that the language of Ora'a, Oyada, Yidia without Riyah, Riyah without Yidia is only relevant by Dinei Mimonot, and that's how we know Shvat Eidut is only about monetary matters. And then we had Rabbi Shimon, who compared it to Shvat HaPikadon, suggested it was a Kavachomer. Kavachomer was undermined, and the end said it was a Gzer Shabbat of Techeta, Techeta from Shvuata Pikadon. Okay, we're going to stop here at 12 lines down on the top of Lamed Aleph. The Gemara will continue tomorrow with asking questions on this Braita.